702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
The Money Show with Bruce Withfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Proud to collaborate with the SA Tomorrow Conference. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Tonight on The Money Show, I'll be heading the ship. My name is Mateo Juaripe, standing in for Bruce Withfield. We look at classic cars and whether they are bankable and how you can get in order to make money there. Kevin Derrick joins us for that conversation. He's the co-founder at Creative Cars. And the future of school sport. We've seen those classic clashes on Super Sport and how the sport is growing. And now there's a market for viewers as well. We'll be learning about a Super Sport app that's letting viewers get in on school sports. And we'll find out if that's bankable and making any money and whether any red avenue is makeable there. Kevin Watt, commercial and acquisitions at Super Sport Schools, joins us for that conversation. And in our explainer today, we look at South Africa's credit rating. Now, we know ratings agencies always make sure the rest of the world knows whether we are bankable, whether they can invest in us. And we want to look at today how important rating agencies are and how the information they get from us gets distributed across the world. Carmen Nell, economist and macro strategist at Matrix Fund, joins us for that conversation. That's The Money Show tonight.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Well, for many, classic cars are a faraway dream because, you know, they cost a lot of money. And, you know, if you want to invest in one, you must really have the big bucks. But car enthusiasts, investment value is key and a motivation for collecting. A global car market is growing, as in the value of collectible cars. It slowed a little at the height of the pandemic, but classic cars are now making a comeback. We're now joined by Kevin Derrick to tell us more about the rising market for classic cars. Kevin, welcome to The Money Show.
Thank you very much, Mateo. Nice to be on the show.
What's the appetite exactly in South Africa for classic cars? And you are also saying that younger people are also going into it. Tell us more about that.
Yes, there's always been an appetite for collectible cars in South Africa, as it is worldwide. So many people use classic cars as a portion of their wealth creation. So whilst they have a portfolio, let's say of cash, a portfolio of being with assets, hard assets, the likes of homes, the likes of farms, the likes of businesses, they also have a collection of classic cars. And it increases their value from a portfolio point of view, so the assets are diversified.
Well, the usual investors in classic cars in the older days were, you know, the guys in the tweeds and the hats, you know, much older than the market is today. But you're saying that younger people are looking to get into these. Are they looking for hot rods? Or are they looking for the classic cars that we've always known?
I think they're looking for something that's a little bit newer than what we would understand as, let's call it, the 1930s, the 50s, the 70s. They're looking at 80s and 90s cars. So these are cars that are, in actual fact, very affordable, but they're very special. And in their day, they were very special. And they were very expensive cars in their day. So to be able to pick a car up like that is relatively affordable, and one can drive it to work every day, have a whole lot of fun in it, and not have a car devalue as you're going forward.
And Kevin, these aren't like shares on the stock exchange. You know, if you're investing in classic cars, you can't buy them bit by bit. You have to buy the whole thing. So what's the cap in terms of how much money I need to put away if I want to get a classic car? Or how much am I looking at if I'm looking to get one that's going to get me a return on investment?
Well, again, you know, one can either spend 2.2 billion rand and buy something that's one of two in the whole world, like the very recent Gullwing that was sold, as set a world record. But ultimately, one can also be buying a Mercedes-Benz, you know, 500 SL. It was a 1990s car. And one can find and look around for something in that value. And so here you've got a sports car, top goes down, and you may have to spend circa 250,000 rand. You could look at an Alfa, for example, 2000, 1980s type of car, also around the 200,000 rand. So, you know, if you think what a new car costs today, Now, that might be a fraction of something that you're wanting to buy.
And what's the spec difference between a car that's going to make you money and a car you just want to take for a breakfast run on a Sunday?
So I'll try and keep the rules short. So if you look at the top 10 cars sold worldwide over the last number of years, in other words, the record breakers, in those record breakers, out of the 10 cars that are there, six of them are Ferraris. So let's start by saying the rules are simple. There's three rules. So if it's red, in other words, if it's a Ferrari, if the top goes down, and if it has two doors, it's always going to have value. I think if you apply that going to any type of car, those cars will continually have money and value in them as they go forward.
And if we look at, you know, how to monetize this and how to make sure that if we get into the sort of investment, how much insurance are we looking to pay for a classic car, say if I get a Mercedes-Benz SL500, like you said?
So remember that these cars often also aren't driven every day. So they are very fantastic specialists in the market that understand classic cars and understand that they're not normal, and the result of that is that they will give you good rates. So it appears that because you're spending a lot of money, you may need to spend a lot of money in insurance. That might not necessarily be the case.
And there is an auction coming up in July. And what are some of the cars that people can look forward to in terms of bidding wars happening there?
Oh, we've got some fantastic things. So the auction's on the 2nd of July at Monte Cassino. And, you know, what we've got is about 120 cars on auction. And we've got some quite special ones. And one of the very special ones we've got is an Alfa GTV 3-litre. So remember, South Africa had a whole lot of quite special cars that only were manufactured and made here, either to race or to have very few numbers of them made up. And we've got a GTV 3-litre that's very, very special. And it's one of the region of 208 cars ever built. And so those kind of things are A, valuable, and tons of fun. And then, of course, we've got some BMWs, a 325i.
Yeah.
So these are also fantastic cars, super valuable, absolutely cult following, M3s, very nice Mercedes-Benzes. So we've really got a fantastic arrangement of cars. We have probably, if I talk about Italian cars being Ferrari and Alfa, we've probably got more than 40 cars just that are Italian-orientated, and that is fantastic for us.
Well, if you've got those bags of cash and the appetite, you can look at investment as cars rather as a form of investment. That was Kevin Derrick, the co-founder at Creative Cars.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Now, in an environment of rising interest rates, increasing inflation, rising petrol prices, and a general higher cost of living, the announcement over, you know, the past month of the S&P Global Ratings that South Africa had a stable and positive outlook was a good one for the country. We're joined now by we're going to be speaking now to Carmen Nell, who's going to be telling us more about why ratings agencies are important and how South Africa can better improve its position in the world's view. Carmen, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Carmen. Welcome to The Money Show. I was just saying, you know, South Africa's outlook in terms of the ratings agency has not been good. We are in non-investment grade, but we are improving marginally from Fitch, Moody's and S&P rating us. Just give us the importance of these ratings agencies and why, you know, countries sign up with them so they can get the rated.
Yeah, so I think it's crucial that, you know, what the rating does is basically gives you access to a wide investor base. It gives you access to local and global capital markets. So people often think, you know, for example, since we've been excluded from the World Government Bond Index, or that ratings don't really feature, for example, in various asset class benchmark indices, that they don't matter. But they do, because generally, your rating is based on fundamentals and the market prices or fundamentals. So your rating and the yield, your government bond yield, generally are aligned. They reflect the same thing. And what you see is generally if you have a higher, in other words, a better quality rating, you tend to have a lower government bond yield. while the reverse also holds. So a lower credit rating means that you generally pay a lot more on your debt. And obviously, the more you pay on debt, the less sustainable your debt position is. So we also then look at sort of what credit rating agencies find important, and it really is the ability of an entity to repay its debt, but also its willingness. And I think really in recent years, it's been the ability of the SA government that's been in question because of weak growth rather than its willingness.
And when we look at ratings agencies, they get criticized a lot, by South Africans as to, you know, these guys are really giving a bad view of us as an economy, giving a bad view of us to investors. Who approaches who between the country and ratings agencies?
Yeah, so because ratings do feature across the investment landscape, even if you think about, you know, whether it's a corporate entity, if they determine who they bank with, you know, a large multinational corporate entity would only bank with highly rated banks. So it's not just about the sovereign, but basically an entity, whether it's a sovereign or a corporate, would approach a credit rating agency to give it as an entity a rating, or then if it is borrowing in the capital market, so a specific bond could give the bond a specific rating. And obviously what we saw in the lead up and then in the wake of the global financial crisis of 2008 and 2009 was that after that episode, it was questioned whether credit rating agencies can really be independent. So you're correct to say they've had a very tough time locally, because of the criticism of downgrading the South African sovereign credit rating. But more importantly, globally, they've been questioned in terms of their independence. So certainly over the past 10 to 12 years, they've done a lot of hard work to sort of show their independence and trying to be more forward-looking rather than adaptive. But it is always a case of a chicken and egg. So if the issuer is not going to pay for having the rating, you know, would ratings really matter? You could then argue that all investors then have to have big in-house teams to rate all the various sovereigns and corporates. So in that sense, it makes sense to have this sort of more broad or public provider. Rather, the alternative is then the investor community pays for the rating, which is also a potential option.
Now, S&P expects South Africa to post a current account surplus in 2022 for a third consecutive year as prices for key metals and mining exports have risen. But, you know, should these be the only things that, ratings agencies are looking at, or should they be also flexible to emerging markets and their needs? I mean, South Africa has to pay grants and has to look at the developmental agenda. Do they, you know, put these things in mind when they rate South Africa?
I do think to some degree those aspects are incorporated. So if you think about, again, an entity's ability, it's about the fiscal position. So what is government getting in terms of tax revenues, and what is government spending that money on? So in terms of the tax revenues, there it is all about growth, potential growth, the diversity of the economy, how fast is the economy growing versus the size of the population. And then on the expenditure side, it is about the macro policies. They have to be pro-growth, but not pro-growth at all costs. They have to be sustainable. So I think there it's important for social cohesion that, for example, the South African government does have to provide a safety net via the grant system. So I don't think necessarily agencies are penalizing the government because of the grant system. If anything, the grant system, you know, has actually been some form of a social good in terms of ensuring socio-economic stability to some degree. Then the other aspect to ability is the willingness. And there, South Africa ranks really highly. So it's all about the institutional strength, protection of property rights, the rule of law. You know, obviously where we had a bit of a dent would be in the perception of corruption. But again, we're working our way towards improving that. And I think that's been a partial factor, at least in terms of, for example, S&P moving the outlook from stable to positive. And Moody's about a month ago or 2 months ago changed the outlook from negative to stable. So, you know, another aspect would be judicial independence. So I do think we should be careful to think that the ratings agencies are only negative towards SA. I think they are a bit more flexible when it comes to emerging markets, and they do factor in the various needs and demands on a government. And it's not only about, you know, balancing the books at all costs, because we know that can actually be counterproductive and actually end up hurting growth. For example, if you hike tax rates too much, which we did see when we had the tax hikes between 2015 and 2018.
Well, that was Carmen Nell in The Money Show Explainer tonight, telling us why ratings agencies are important and what exactly they look out for when they rate South Africa.
Because some journeys are better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Multinational sports broadcaster SuperSport acquired a majority stake in a school sports broadcasting business renamed SuperSport Schooled. SuperSport Schools uses unmanned AI technology cameras and low production resources to broadcast school sports live and on demand through interactive app. Now we're going to be speaking to Kelvin Watt. He's the commercial and acquisitions head at SuperSport Schools. Kelvin, welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening. Thank you very much.
What's the appetite for school sports? We saw a SuperSport going into this last year in April, and you know, you've gained some ground. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think it goes back a number of years. You know, I think SuperSport has always clearly understood that schools and school sports in South Africa really underpins and is the foundation of sport in this country through a number of research studies that have done over, you know, the last sort of 5-8 years. We've watched just how that has grown into so many communities around the country, obviously held back by the fact that there still are a vast majority of schools in this country that unfortunately don't have sport within their curriculum. But certainly for those that do, sport is massively important. And as we say, you know, amongst the kids today, a lot of our research has found that they fundamentally more interested in their own sport and that of their peers than you know, some of the other more sort of professional or adult sport out there. And amongst parents and grandparents and other members of the community, school sport is actually the sport that they care the most about. So that really sort of led to the initial investment by SuperSport into what is today SuperSport Schools. And one of the things that SuperSport understood was that as much as, you know, we would see that somewhere, just for example, in schools, rugby, somewhere between 850 and a million, 850,000 and a million people attend schoolboy rugby matches during the winter weekends. You know, that's not other sports, which is a huge amount of people. So really, when we talk about South Africa being a sport-crazy country, a lot of it is really around school sport, and that's really where we see people spending most of their time attending, but also obviously from a participation perspective, because, you know, the vast majority of participation in sport in this country is by children.
And, you know, Kelvin, going to sports and watching live games, you know, not everybody can make it. How has the app helped,
100%.
You know, all the old boys, all the parents who are stuck in meetings and want to watch their boyki on the rugby field? You know, how many of those viewers have you attracted?
Well, the viewership really has grown. We've probably settling on close to 10 million viewers now for the year since we started. Really, you know, we really got going in December. We launched the business in April, May last year, and obviously, you know, literally went almost a week, 10 days in, we went into that sort of winter second wave of COVID last year when school sport all got cancelled again. And we slowly started up sort of through September, October, but only really got going in December, January. And since then, we've had just short of 10 million views of school sports across our various platforms. And we've seen a wonderful growth. You know, we've broadcast over 20 different sports. We literally have had from under 9 C and D teams right through to first teams. And we started to obviously, you know, stream a lot of sport on the SuperSport Schools platform from, you know, under 20 rugby, varsity cup, varsity, you know, various things like that through the varsity sports as well. So the growth has been phenomenal and continues to grow.
And, you know, the great thing about an app is that anyone can watch this anywhere around the world. Have you attracted viewers from the likes of maybe the UK, New Zealand, who always like to nick our talent, especially in rugby and cricket?
Absolutely, we have. You know, it's also, there's a huge amount of you know, expat South Africans that are studying overseas, working around the world. We have a lot of parents of kids that are being schooled in South Africa that live around the world, grandparents. And we see a lot of that activity. You know, certainly, for example, we see some unusual activity around. So when I say unusual, You know, we suddenly see a lot of French viewership when some of our top rugby schools are playing. We certainly see it. We see a lot of viewership from India when our cricket activity is on, you know, so we certainly see that. But, yeah, currently about 63-64% of our viewership is from South Africa. The balance comes from other parts of Africa and around the world.
And is it commercial? You know, are you seeing any ad revenue interest from marketers who want to join and, you know, market to this viewership that you've got for school sports?
Absolutely. I think this is perhaps, you know, commercially the most exciting part of the SuperSport schools business. One of the decisions made very early by SuperSport was that none of this content would ever sit behind a paywall, and that anyone who downloads the app can use it freely. And also that we wouldn't charge schools for the activity. So this entire operation is initially funded by MultiChoice and SuperSport, and then the balance of that funding starts coming from sponsors and advertisers, and that's continuing to grow. We have some of the most extraordinary sponsors and advertisers that are growing with us, some that, you know, that came on very early in the project. People like Nashua were amazing early on, Airlink, Blue Car Rental, Adidas. No, a whole host of people.
That's a whole host of them, yes.
And literally every day we're getting some new people. You know, we just acquired a new partner today, the Courier guy, who's just seen this extraordinary opportunity of what they can do in this space. And we continue to do so. You know, a number of the banks and various have been involved in a lot of the projects.
All right. All right, Kevin, thank you very much for giving us, you know, that outlook on school sports and how it's been commercialized through your app.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
It's been a turbulent week for world markets as stocks head for their worst weekly performance since the start of the pandemic in March 2020. Global central banks have been hiking interest rates in an effort to tame rising inflation. The tighter policy approach has investors concerned that the leading economies are heading for a recession, and that's hit markets this week. We speak now to David Peacock, portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. David, welcome to The Money Show. Just give us a wrap of the week that we've seen with all this turbulence happening on world markets and how it's affected the JSE.
Yeah, good evening, Mateo. It's been a really hectic week this week. You know, with us unfortunately having a bit of a public holiday yesterday, it tends to sort of exacerbate the moves because, you know, unfortunately we tend to play a little bit of catch up. So We were down sort of around 2% for most of today. In terms of international markets, you know, the Dow has just slipped into negative territory now. It's just flat at this stage. So unfortunately, we will take our lead from international markets, particularly the U.S., and really on the back of the Federal Reserve pushing up rates higher than anticipated and higher than the Fed chairman was actually anticipating or what he was telling the market was going to be happening. So, you know, unfortunately, those issues tend to have an impact. I must, however, just say that we were down sort of 2% for most of the day.
Yes.
We came under a lot of pressure right at the close. And that very simply is not because the market is melting down. It's really because of the fact that we had index rebalancing happening on a number of the various indices, which obviously then changes the exposure. So, for example, at the close today, the resources index was down sort of 4.7%. Top 40 was down sort of 3.4%, and the all share was down 3% on the day. But as I say, that's not because global markets are under severe pressure. It's because of index rebalancing in terms of the various indices on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
That was portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, David Peacock, giving us a rundown of the markets this week. It's 6:30.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, proud to collaborate with the SA Tomorrow Conference. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. My name is Mateo Juaripe, standing in for Bruce Whitfield tonight on The Money Show. In our next feature, we have the Friday File with the Durban Art Fair. Now, South Africa's accessible art fair is heading underground from the 21st to the 24th of July this year. It's the 10th edition. Durban Art Fair brings together galleries, artists and curators from around the country to present and sell contemporary art. We're now joined by Glynis Hislop, who's the founder of the Durban Art Fair. Glynis, just give us a... an overview of why this year you're going with the theme Going Underground?
Well, it's an interesting question. But when we first started the fair in 2013, the forum company of which I'm the MD, we had a wonderful venue called Turbine Hall. And a part of it was a basement, and much of the fair was held in what was the second power station, actually, in Johannesburg, the basement of Turbine Hall. And unfortunately, we decided to leave Turbine Hall after 10 years, and we've held it in Illovo for 2 years. And this year, we're actually going to a fantastic location, and we decided to try and recreate what we've had before, a feeling of being underground, and it's in this beautiful, brand-new, spanking, gorgeous parking lot at Oxford Parks, which is a new development in Rosebank, which, of course, as you know, is the heart of the galleries and really the art center of Johannesburg.
Definitely. If you want art, that's where you go in Johannesburg. Now, you always pride yourself in getting emerging artists and unearthing some talent. Who do you have on the lineup this year?
Well, apart from all the galleries and the various printers, etc., we also have four special projects. Three of them are particularly aimed at our own curation of young talent. So one is called Taff Unearthed, and that is a mentorship for 10 artists that we select. Brand new, and they may not have had any solo exhibitions before. We also have something called Taff Off the Grid, and that is for artists who might not be as young or starting their careers, might be more mid-career, but are not actually in the gallery system. And that's a very exciting project because you see people that you might not have come across, and usually they're snapped up by a gallery thereafter. We always have something called Taff Talent, which is a graduate show. So our two curators go around and the different universities in South Africa looking at the master shows and those about to graduate and choose what they call the top talent. So it's exciting. There's really an opportunity to see very young, very accessible, very young and exciting artists, actually all of whom have got enormous talent and usually in years to come will do incredibly well.
This is a development platform for those artists that do attend and showcase their work. You also have a six-month mentorship program that you were talking about in Taff Unearthed. Can you share some of the graduates that have come from this program and where they are now?
Oh, that's a very good question. I mean, I'm just thinking of one of our first ones who came through the program, in fact, also won a residency, and MASH, and he is actually with Everard Reed. We've had so many of them. We've got Pepper Fotso, who, in fact, had a show recently at Aspire. He's really fantastically up-and-coming. Well, not so much up-and-coming. He's an incredible artist, actually. Gosh, we've had so many. I feel awful for mentioning those two. That just
I think that's a good thing. It just shows how many have come through the program, and it's not just a list of five. It's actually a score of artists that have come through your own program. How are you looking to, you know, bring the galleries forth? You know, we've seen the COVID pandemic and how, you know, theaters were closed, the galleries were closed, stadiums were closed, and this art fair is basically a chance for them to showcase and say, here's what we've got, come see our work.
Well, we hope people will come out and support them. I mean, it's been so hard for them. We were determined in 2020. We were actually the first art fair in South Africa to go online because we felt that we needed to showcase work through that medium. That was, of course, in the, you know, really early days of the lockdown. We continue to do that, so it will still be available online. We're also put all the art on a fantastic international platform, which is the largest platform for showing art in the world, called Artsy. So people who can't come can look at the art. But there's nothing like actually seeing a work in real life, you know, to see colors, to see the texture, to understand what the work's about. So this year, we're back, very much so. We did have a fair last year, but unfortunately, it was still during a time when we could only have 100 people in the building at the time. So now we're hoping it will be a celebration again. and we can all walk around with a glass of champagne or a cup of coffee and enjoy it in a very relaxed way. And that's what we try to do always, is try and get people just to come, even if you don't know anything about art, and just walk around and look, and slowly you'll build what you like, what you think is attractive. Slowly you'll, I hope, want to start an art connection.
You know, I'm an art novice myself, so I should definitely pull through at the Turban Art Fair. How can we look forward, especially those that can't come through? Can they join you online? Like you said, you did this during the pandemic. Would you still have that platform for them to do that?
So www.turbineartfair, when the fair opens, all of works will be online if the gallerists, etc., load them. And it will also be on Artsy under the fairs section, Turbine Art Fair. So people can certainly look online. And otherwise, we are at our new exciting location, as I said, Oxford Parks in Rosebank, from the 21st to the 24th of July. And, yeah, we'd love to see as many people as possible. We have a fabulous talks program that will be on the website subsequently, but it will be done live upstairs at the Radisson. And, we're very excited about what we've got to show.
And the event is happening in about a month's time. How much should people put away in order to attend? What's the damage?
So it's 150 Rand online. If you come to the door and you haven't bought a ticket, it's, I think, 180 Rand. It's simply to get people to it's so easy just to buy your ticket online and show it at the door. Again, on www.turbineartfair.
Well, that's an opportunity to see some of South Africa's great art talent at the Turbine Art Fair in its 10th edition this time. That was Glenys Hislop, the founder of the Turbine Art Fair. Up next,
walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
I jumped the gun there. Up next is the Brutal Biz Quiz. Now, today we've had a lot of business stories that have been interesting on the show. And if you've been listening, you'll know some of the answers. Our first question, give us the answer to this. The US Fed Reserve hiked interest rates by 75 basis points in order to fight what? Give us that answer.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Proud to collaborate with the SA Tomorrow Conference. That's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
Welcome back to The Money Show. My name is Mateo Khwaripa, standing in for Bruce Whitfield. I'm already seeing a line of callers, and these are the Brutal Biz Quiz brains. Ishmael, I believe you're on the line. You are ready to give us the answer to that question. I did ask that the US Fed Reserve hiked interest rates by 75 basis points in order to fight what, Ishmael?
To fight inflation.
Ah, there we go. There we go. There's a brainer. There's a brainer. Let's go to the second question now. Let's see if you can top that. Which American multinational beverage corporation delayed its listing on the JSE this week?
I'm actually not sure. I'll take a guess and I'll say PepsiCo.
Oh, unfortunately, that's not the answer, Ishmael. Let's go to another brainer who can give us that answer. Which American multinational beverage corporation delayed its listing on the JSE? Monwabisi, you have the answer. Monwabisi? I think Monwabisi is still trying to Google that answer there. Monwabisi, are you on the line? Monwabisi proving a little shy. I'll ask that question again. Which American multinational beverage corporation delayed its listing on the JSE this week? If you want to answer that question, you can call 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Let's see if you're the brainy one on the Brutal Biz Quiz.
702.
Call us on 011-883-0702.
Welcome back to The Money Show. My name is Matoa Khwaripe, standing in for Bruce Whitfield. We are busy with the Brutal Biz Quiz, and I see we have a series of callers waiting in line to take on the Brutal Biz Quiz today. I asked you earlier on, what is the name of the South African businessman who was knighted by the Queen of England this week? Temba in Bertrams, you have the answer.
All right, Bradley Free.
That is the correct answer. Bradley Freed, of course, was knighted by the Queen of England this week. Let's see if you can get the next one there, Temba. What is the name of the court which recently found the government was wrong to ban the sale of cigarettes at the start of the lockdown?
Repeat the question again.
What is the name of the court which recently found the government was wrong to ban the sale of cigarettes at the start of lockdown?
It was the Constitutional Court.
Oh, that is unfortunately the incorrect answer. The Brutal Quiz proving too brutal for Temba there. Our next question for the Brutal Biz Quiz is a fun one. Netflix is launching a reality TV series based on which South African survival drama TV series? Netflix is launching a reality TV series based on which South African survival drama TV series? Pori in Fos Loras, do you know the answer to that question?
No, I live too far out. No.
You're not big on Netflix?
No. I'm big on Netflix.
Let me give you a clue then, Pori. If you're big on Netflix, then you should be able to get this one. It made financially struggling people to participate in deadly children's games. It was very big in 2021.
No, I can't.
Ah, the Brutal Quiz proving too brutal there for Pori. We have Ishmael in Centurion. Ishmael, Netflix is launching a reality TV series based on which South Korean survival drama TV series?
Squid Game.
That is the correct answer. Ishmael coming through with the brains from Centurion. Let's see if you can get the next one, Ishmael. Name the giant cosmetic company founded by Charles Rifson that has filed for bankruptcy this week.
I'll take a guess. I'll say Revlon.
That is correct. That doesn't sound like a guess, Ishmael. You knew the answer, didn't you?
No, yeah, it's an actual guess.
Okay, let's see if you can cap it off, Ishmael, and be the brainiest brain this week. Egypt and Israel has agreed to export natural gas to which continent? Egypt and Israel has agreed to export natural gas to which continent?
I'll make a guess and I'll say Africa.
That is incorrect, but you know, you gave it a try. You gave it a try, Ishmael. Thank you very much from Centurion. That was our Brutal Biz Quiz for this week. Sfiso is ready at the news desk with your news.